Plains Tribune presents the Friday Mashup.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for attending our Talking Classifieds broadcasting here from the corner of Canyon and Jackson in Spearfish, South Dakota. We had someone who wanted to advertise with us who's one of those shy little butterflies. She wrote a book. It's called Louisa Bean, The Bean Family Wagon Train, 1855 from Maine to Iowa. That's spelled L-O-U-I-S-A, and you can purchase this on Amazon. Bean spelled B-E-A-N. Here's the description of that book. Louisa and Joel sell their farm and most of their livestock. They take their six children and all that can fit into two covered wagons, leaving the comfort and safety of their home in Maine. The family goes on a long journey to Iowa. More Bean families join the wagon train on the westward journey. These brave people kept their focus on the western horizon and the fertile farmland they could purchase when they arrived in Iowa. Not yet knowing the hardships that awaited some of them, they were anxious to get resettled before their first Iowa winter. Again, check this out on Amazon. Pick up a copy. It's Deborah Bean is the author, and she's a Black Hills original. She'd love for you to read her family's story. Again, that's Louisa Bean, The Bean Family Wagon Train, 1855. L-O-U-I-S-A-B-E-A-N. That book is $4.77. Pick up a copy today.
October 20th through the 22nd, there will be a spiritual gathering held at the Latch String Restaurant in Spearfish Canyon. Lecture topics include science, history, the natural world, biblical scripture, and comparative religions. These lectures are supposed to provide foundational faith through evidence of a creator. All faiths are welcome. Lecture times are Friday morning at 10 to 12, Friday evening, 7 to 9, Saturday morning, 9 to 11, Saturday evening, 7 to 9, and Sunday morning, 10 to 12.
Hey, everybody, this is John Dale. I just wanted to let you know that we've got the ability to produce other shows through PlainsTribune.com. If you know anybody who is interested in doing radio work, but doesn't have a way to get started, we would be happy to listen to samples and demonstrations of their abilities to produce a radio show, an audio show. It's the Internet Radio Broadcast Tower. And that could simply be a segment of any length, really, below like 10 minutes. Or if you wanted to try your hand at producing an entire hour, just reach out and we can help and provide some guidance. We've learned a few things after working with Jim Thompson of CBSI, Creative Broadcast Systems Incorporated, the voice of the Plains, but also listening to a lot of radio through the years, traveling back and forth across the country. We've got a general idea of how it goes, but also we have expertise on the Internet and how the Internet can be used in order to broadcast over copper instead of broadcasting radio frequency. You can actually broadcast over all copper wire so that you don't have to emit RF exhaust into our living environment. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day.
Hey, I'm just calling in to tell a joke, man. Do you know why you never see elephants hiding in trees? Because they're good at it, man.
Hello again, everyone. This is John Dale, and thank you for attending our Talking Classified service. We have another entry from the same shy little butterfly as before. This is author Deborah Bean, a Black Hills original. She wrote a second book to follow up with the first called Louisa's Legacy, The Story of John T. Bean. The saga continues of the Bean family who settled in the Muscatine, Iowa area. After surviving the arduous journey and challenges of life, John T. Bean carries on the legacy of Joel and Louisa Bean. Farming in the mid-1800s with horses to work the land, he manages to prosper and raise a large family despite hardships. The family survives danger, harsh weather, and fire and drought as a testament to their faith. Once again, this is author Deborah J. Bean. She's a Black Hills original, and she would love for you to pick up a copy of each one of her books. Thank you so much for attending the Talking Classifieds. We'll be back with more soon.
Growing Business Solutions is an LLC started in Tucson, Arizona in 2004. This is John Dale, everyone. I founded Growing Business Solutions as the master's thesis for the McGuire Center for Entrepreneurship Concentration in Entrepreneurship. Since then, I've worked professionally in enterprise software, delivering solutions to healthcare. I've delivered encryption software for the largest credit union in Canada. I put together a 52-gun raffle for law enforcement, a law enforcement association. I've delivered for higher ed, K-12, and other firms. I can design and build these applications from the ground up. They're scalable, fast, secure, privacy certified. I can also conduct audits, and I can perform consulting of many different technological varieties. Again, that's growingbusinesssolutions.com. Thank you.
And tell, but he once dated Karen. After every kiss, she'd ask to see his boss, her loss. He might need another space suit, a black belt with the belch. He's American spaceman, half Irish and half Welsh.
Join us now for the next exciting episode of Captain Backfire, The Tight Boot, False Flag. In this episode of Captain Backfire, the captain and his crew have set out on a humanitarian mission to free an oppressed people. But not long into their journey, Mission Control begins to receive strange readings from a nearby moon that cannot be ignored.
Captain, this is Mission Control. I'm getting some weird readings from an uninhabited moon about 4 minutes east of here that we can't ignore.
Sounds good, Mission Control. We're not on a time crunch, are we?
Well, actually...
Good. I've been meaning to try out my new space boots. Land the ship, Mission Control. We're going into full moon mode.
Acknowledge, Captain. Diverting course and engaging landing sequence. ETA 4 minutes. There's no atmosphere on the moon, so you're going to have to get the spacesuits out of storage.
Roger.
Who's Roger? Over.
I never know.
Lieutenant Jackson has reported to the airlock to accompany you on the mission, Cap. We're just waiting on you now.
Roger. On my way, Mission Control. This is Jackson. What is that noise? It's these new boots. I haven't broken them in yet. I'm at the airlock, Mission Control.
We're ready. You can open the doors now.
Yes, sir. Depressurizing airlock and opening airlock doors. Extending ramp and activating non-slip texturization. Activating alarm. Playing music. I've been gathering data on the moon, and it seems that there are miles of underground tunnels and caverns. That's where the strange readings are coming from.
My portable handheld sensor device is showing a tunnel opening about 100 feet to our right, Cap.
After you, Jackson.
Wait, why do I have to go first?
You're closer.
Relaying portable handheld sensor device readings to my graphical user interface and amplifying sensor strength.
Are you making any more sense of the data, Mission Control?
I'm picking up some faint life signs from the tunnel you are entering, Captain. Keep your head down and proceed with caution.
Roger, we're in the tunnel. I'm activating my electromagnetonic ray emitter.
I'm turning my flashlight on, too.
Captain, I was reading 6 life signs, including yours. Now I'm only reading 5.
Are you sure, Mission Control?
Affirmative, Cap, and now I only read 4. Now 3.
What does that mean?
I think it means that something or someone is disappearing.
We don't see anything that could be the cause of the disturbance.
My portable handheld sensor device is reading an anomaly 50 feet ahead of us.
Do you have visual contact? I repeat, can you see it?
No, it's hard to see anything down here.
I'm a drummer in a ska band, and I want to sit in with your country combo.
Hand me the laser rifle! Jackson! Jackson! Jackson, wait for me!
The airlock doors are open, waiting for your arrival.
Roger, Mission Control. We're almost there. Be ready to launch.
Initiating launch sequence.
We're in! Go! 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 Launch!
Closing doors. Launching. We have liftoff.
Oh, that was close. Hey, Jackson, did you get new boots too?
Nope.
He's not the kind to kiss and tell, but he once dated Karen. After every kiss, she'd ask to see his boss, her loss. He might need another spacesuit, a black belt with the belch. He's American spaceman, half Irish and half Welsh.
This is John Dale. I want to share something with you that is near and dear to my heart, and that is my computer monitor. I'm a computer professional. I sit in front of this thing for my job every day, sometimes as much as 18 hours at a time. Over the years, I've been doing this for decades. I've developed something called computer vision syndrome. I have light sensitivity issues when I look away from the monitor. Now, if I step away from the computer for a while, it feels better. I have to work. I have to get my job done. And that's why I prefer digital ink monitors by DB to Dawn. These things use that digital ink like an e-reader, so you don't have this light blasting into your face. They're awesome. Check it out. Go to dbtodom.com today. Hello everyone, this is John Dale of Pretty Little Ditties. I play original music and I do a lot of improv with my presentation. Every performance is different. I also love to teach and interact with people who appreciate and enjoy live music from a real person. I have deep knowledge and experience in music, and it comes through in the playing that I work hard to be able to bring to your event. If you'd like to have me out, please don't hesitate to drop me a note at info@plainstribune.com. Again, that's Pretty Little Ditties. That's what I'm calling my little music venture. So I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
All of the time, my baby going fishing too. Bet your life that your sweet wife, she's gonna catch more fish than you. Where are many fish bites have you got, good bait? Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. With my pole and my line, I'm going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. Drive me up out of my mind. Can I go fishing with you? So I took him on down to my favorite fishing hole. What do you think that baby brother of mine did do? He caught a 9-pound catfish on the bottom. Yes, he got him, and he's strutting on down like he's real gone. With my pole and my line, he says, I'm a going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. Catch more fish than you. Well, many fish bites if you got good bait. That's a little tip that I would like to relay. With my pole and my line, I'm going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too.
Sometimes history forgets some of our most important stories, especially the true ones involving true people and arguably the heroes of their age. This is the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, in McMinn County in the early 1940s. The information for this story was sourced from various sources on the internet, including AmericanHeritage.com and Wikipedia. Athens, Tennessee, was a meeting place for farmers and all of the surrounding community members who wanted to gather and discuss politics and war, religion. They wanted to talk about their families and how to keep their country great. That was basically the function of Athens until something happened. World War II interrupted this peaceful life, this continuity of the Republic in this isolated region of Tennessee, fairly isolated. Since the Civil War, Athens had voted, this McMinn County had voted to be Republican. They had elected Republican leaders over and over. In the 1930s, though, Tennessee had significant changes in the way that its politics were working. In particular, a political machine had formed from a failed mayor of Memphis. And it was a Democrat machine, and it got Democrats elected. This machine descended upon Athens, and, according to the people of that day, was stealing elections by stuffing ballot boxes. In 1936, Paul Cantrell of the Democratic Party was elected sheriff. People say that the election was stolen, but no evidence was able to be produced of this theft, and so it was impossible for them to try to use their process because of the way the laws were structured in order to question that election. But nonetheless, many Athens citizens just knew in their hearts that something wasn't right in those ballot boxes. But eventually, and this is the story of the Battle of Athens, eventually they saw their suspicions vindicated completely. What was happening in Athens was, and McMinn County, is that Sheriff Cantrell was making money for everybody he arrested, booked, incarcerated, and then released. They made a lot of money, especially for the day, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Sometimes they would arrest people, as many people as 115 in a single weekend. Buses would come into or through town. They would be rousted by the sheriff's deputies. People who were asleep on the bus would then be arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct, and $16.50 would go toward the county system there. What eventually happened is this corruption spread, and I think it created a general malaise there in the Athens area. Prostitution, liquor, and gambling grew so prevalent that it became common knowledge that Athens was wide open for criminal enterprise. And it was very offensive to the people who lived there, who were raised on Christianity and Christian values, who wanted to have peaceful, alcohol-free existences where they could raise children and be successful in their businesses and on their farms. In 1940, and this is directly from the AmericanHeritage.com article, in 1940, the election sent George Woods, a plump and affable Etowah crony of Cantrell, to the state legislature. Woods promptly introduced an act to redistrict McMinn County. It reduced the number of voting precincts from 23 to 12 and cut down the number of justices of the peace from 14 to 7. Of these seven, four were openly Cantrell men. When Governor Prentice Cooper signed Woods's bill into law on February 15, 1941, effectively all Republican opposition died in McMinn County. So the elections were stolen through stuffed ballot box, and then laws were created to make sure that they would never be able to use a peaceful, fair process to reclaim control of their county. Department of Justice records show that investigations did occur in McMinn County in 1940, 1942, and 1944. None of these had any kind of a reasonable resolution, unfortunately for the people of McMinn County. So here's the context of that day. Basically what happened was, while these boys were off to war, 10% of the county's population, that amounts to 3,526 young men, were off to fight in foreign theaters. But people began to tell each other, you know what, wait until the GIs get back, things are going to be different. They were being abused by their local law enforcement. In the summer of 1945, veterans began returning home. By 1946, the streets overflowed with uniforms. But Cantrell was neither intimidated nor worried. They continued arresting one vet after another. The more they beat up, the madder we got, the veterans were quoted as saying. In the early months of 1946, they decided in secret meetings to field a slate of their own candidates. They were going to run for their own elections. They formed a nonpartisan political party and became organized. At the bottom of page one, on election eve, July 31st, 1946, VFW members in neighboring Blount County said that 450 veterans were ready to respond to any need in McMinn County. Above this was a report that Tony Pierce had killed a muskrat in his front yard. If you read between the lines of this, you could tell that something pretty sinister was brewing, and an unfortunate loss of human life could occur. Cantrell, the sheriff who was allegedly elected in a dirty election, warned that the veterans had printed sample ballots with the intention of stuffing ballot boxes. The veterans, with car-mounted loudspeakers, drove around saying, "Your vote will be counted as cast." 2 days before that election, there was an advertisement in the Post-Athenian, that was a newspaper of that region. It said, quote, "These young men fought and won a war for good government. They know what it takes and what it means to have a clean government. And they are energetic enough, honest enough, and intelligent enough to give us a good, clean government." A couple of pages farther on in the article, Democrats had their say. "Look at the facts," they said, "and you will vote for the Democrat ticket. The campaign fight is as old as the hills, and this is simply the story of the outs wanting back in." Referring, of course, to the GIs who were fighting for freedom against fascism for the United States and other countries as outs. This is what I would call gaslighting. "In order to see that law and order is maintained, I have several hundred deputies patrolling the county," the sheriff said. Outside the county, they came from outside the county and some were from out of state. Trouble was a-brewing for sure. On election day, voters lined up early in the largest turnout in local history. Walter Ellis, a legally appointed GI representative, at the first precinct in the courthouse, was arrested and jailed for protesting the irregularities that he witnessed in this election. Cop cars were rushing to and fro and sirens were wailing. Two telegrams dated July 22nd, one had been addressed to Governor Jim McCord, Nashville, Tennessee, and the other to General Tom Clark, Washington, D.C. They requested assistance to ensure a fair election. Neither of these telegrams had been answered. The sheriff had posted armed guards at each precinct, and in preparation for the 4 p.m. poll closings, when the ballot boxes would be moved to the jail for counting, centralized location for counting these ballots, he had deployed men everywhere to try to keep the quote-unquote peace and the continuity of his administration. The group crossed the street, the GI group crossed the street. They held a meeting, and they agreed that those who did not have weapons should go get them and return as quickly as possible. The conflict was about to start. The GIs were coming back from a war theater where they were fairly unrestricted in their activities, drinking, carousing, fighting, and of course killing. Is this something that the county sheriff would really want to be engaged in? We'll find out in the next segment.
See where I belong. I haven't seen you. than 5 years and a day. The day I woke up to find that you were gone. I didn't let you know I was heading back, but in a town this small it won't stay like that. I don't give a damn if you hear it through the vine. This whiskey's warmer than this heart of mine. Some cheap red wine. I'm just passing by, and so on and so on. No, I don't think that I'll cross that line. I hear your lover after me caught a plane to Tennessee, and your mama told you that you should have never let me. And even if the good Lord gave me a sign, girl, this whiskey's a warmer than this heart of mine.
It was 3 p.m. at the polls when Tom Gillespie, an elderly black farmer from Union Road, stepped inside the 11th Precinct polling place in the Athens Waterworks on Jackson Street, when a Cantrell guard told Gillespie, "Nigger, you can't vote here." When he protested why he struck him with brass knuckles. When Gillespie dropped his ballot and ran for the door, Wise pulled a pistol and shot him in the back as he reached the sidewalk. This was the first shot fired in the Battle of Athens. Ed Vestal and Charles Scott had been seized and held hostage inside the waterworks by Wise and another deputy named Neal. When the veterans reached the waterworks, they gathered pretty quickly and went to save their buddies. The crowd began taunting the armed guards as Wise and Neal stood at a window watching things devolve outside. Vestal and Scott plunged through the plate glass windows and ran bleeding for the protection of the crowd. The next thing that was heard was a GI shouting, "Let's go get our guns!" They had a warfighter's mentality here. Like I said, these guys were just back from a war theater, and they had pulled the trigger many times and thrown many grenades and been through many life-threatening incidents. It's not the kind of group that you would want to mess with. The GIs believed they were in a foreign war theater fighting for fair elections, I'm sure. they started trying to gather these ballot boxes to take them to the jail to count them. And that's when things really started to get heated. Two deputies got to the GI headquarters, sent there by the sheriff to calm things down. They were disarmed and taken prisoner immediately. Two others were sent later. They were also taken prisoner. Three more deputies came with pistols drawn. They got beat up and dragged inside. Eventually, though, the veterans started to get a little shaky. They weren't sure if they were doing legal things. A small nucleus of veterans was alone with seven hostages now. They took them to the woods, 10 miles out of town, beat them up, and shackled them to trees. As the day drug on, many instances and irregularities were observed by the people in the town, especially the veterans, who had enlisted themselves to ensure a fair election. As things came to a head, one particular incident seemed to signal that the fight was on. A woman attempted to vote and did not have the appropriate identification and paperwork. That's when Wilburn, a sheriff's deputy, reached to deposit the ballot, and a gentleman last name Harold, grabbed his wrist. Wilburn slapped him across the head with a blackjack and kicked him in the face as he fell to the floor. This precinct was immediately closed, the back alley blocked at both ends, and the guards crossed the lawn to the jail with the ballot box, with the GIs as captives. Cantrell forces had calculated that if they could control a certain number of these ballot boxes, the election would be theirs. Seems to make sense. They had done some of the calculus and done some of the math, and they figured this is our path to victory. But it seemed to be over. The GI headquarters was deserted, but really what was happening were the veterans, having confirmed all of the suspicions of their community, went to gather up their weapons. Here's a list of the things that they obtained from the National Guard Armory in order to fight the Battle of Athens. They broke down the doors, took all the rifles, two Thompson submachine guns, all the ammunition they could carry. They loaded it up on a 2-ton truck, went back to GI headquarters, and passed out 70 high-powered rifles, two bandoliers of ammunition with each one. Paul Cantrell and Pat Mansfeld were in the area, locked inside the jail, going through the ballot boxes actively. The presence of Mansfield and Woods, which was a state representative, that's George Woods, meant the majority of the election commission was on hand, so they could be certified right there without any oversight. That's when bullets started ricocheting up and down White Street. That's along the front of where the jail was located. "I shot him. He wheeled and fell inside of the jail," White claimed. "I shot a second man. His leg flew out from under him. He crawled under a car." The veterans were starting to feel the pressure at this point. They felt like if they didn't get into that jail and rout these guys and get the ballot boxes, that there would be rescuers coming from the state level, from surrounding communities, and they might spend the rest of their lives in prison while the evidence would be covered up. Turns out, though, that they had called for support from neighboring counties, but neighboring counties said, "Do you think I'm crazy?" Some of the GIs put together Molotov cocktails, started throwing them at the jail. Didn't really do much. The bullets were not penetrating the bricks, so that's when they brought out the dynamite. After a couple of volleys of dynamite on the porch and on the roof of the porch and right around the jail, an ambulance was called in. It was presumed the ambulance was there to pick up some wounded people, but actually Paul Cantrell and Pat Mansfield hopped in it at the last moment and sped away. The jail's defenders eventually staggered from this ruined stronghold after a few people had indeed been shot and after a battle had raged. Can you imagine being one of these police officers and looking out onto the street and seeing all of those high-powered rifles and people who knew how to use them pointed at you? How must that have felt? Once they actually got these guys out of the jail, 10 years, quote, of suppressed rage exploded. The townspeople set upon the captured deputies. They probably would have ripped them limb from limb, but the GIs stood in the way. However, there was one particular unpopular deputy, Minus Wilburn, who had his throat slashed. Others were beat. Another had his jaw shattered by a bullet. The New York Times wrongly trumpeted the news. Tennessee sheriff is slain in primary day violence. Nobody actually died that day, and the only person that was prosecuted was the guy who shot the black gentleman in the back. They were told there are peaceful means by which reform can be achieved. There is very little difference, essentially, between a vigilante and a member of a lynch mob. And if we're seeking an answer to crooked politics, the one that the Athens boys just propounded sure ain't it. The Commonwealth cautiously compared the battle to the American Revolution, then went on to say that nothing, quote, could be more dangerous, both for our liberties and our welfare, than the making of the McMinn County Revolution into a habit. On August 4th, Pat Mansfield telegraphed his resignation as sheriff to Minkin County. For a full year afterward, the national press seized upon the most little detail coming out of this community as, quote, evidence of their lawlessness. Only one man, as I said a moment ago, had charges brought against him. That'd be Windy Wise. That was the deputy who shot the old black farmer, Tom Gillespie, in the back, and he got a sentence of 1 to 3 years. So, ladies and gentlemen, the Battle of Athens is an example of gaslighting. You've got a good example of gaslighting there. It's an example of letting a situation fester and not hearing the concerns of a community. I think it's very important for us to come together with our veterans, with our active duties, with our sheriff, with our local police. Now, right now, we have to come together and ensure the integrity of everything that we do. If you're out there and you're listening, I would like to implore you to operate with integrity, regardless of what you've done in the past. Make that change today. Be a positive force within your community. And let's avoid something like this happening here, where we have a lot of veterans. We have a lot of active duty folks. We have a lot of military families. We have a lot of intelligence agency people. And we put them in a bad position when we don't conduct ourselves as civilians in such a way to signal to all of these amazing people that we're worth fighting for.
Queens and ducks all in a row. Well, getting out. 'Cause all my friends, I think I'll stick around. Let's have another round.
Everyone, this is John Dale, PlainsTribune.com and the Talking Classifieds. We had one of our listeners send this classified ad in. I'm asking $125 for all of the following. They can email me at freedomsofgrowing@gmail.com for more information, pictures, etc. Also mention, please, that I'm planning to have a storage unit sale soon with lots of kitchen items, like new men's Wrangler jeans, size 34 by 34, women's jeans, size 8, 9, and 10, women's tops, 100% cotton, long and short sleeves, mostly made in America. Here's that email again, freedomsofgrowing@gmail.com. That's freedomsofgrowing, freedomsofgrowing@gmail.com for more information on that information.
Good afternoon. I have a Singer sewing machine, model 15-91. It has a pod motor. It requires no belt. It's direct drive, probably from the late 40s, maybe early 50s, an original three-drawer cabinet. The cabinet could stand a little attention on the top surface, but I would rate it as good plus condition with owner's manual, buttonhole attachment, and other attachments. I'm asking $200, must pick up. You can contact me at 605-645-3882. Thank you.
Are you looking for a dynamic, talented, educated, and fun musician to join your band? I can play drums, banjo, guitar. I can play a little bit of bass, electric guitar, acoustic guitar, classical guitar. And I can also sing and do backup vocals. And I would love to sit in with your band, and maybe we can make some awesome music together. Just call this service and drop a message if you're interested. I'd be happy to do that. My name is John Dale, 605-549-5515, and I'll get that message if you're interested in having me sit in. Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and I have a very lightly played with 18-inch doll and horse set with all the original accessories, along with the original horse and doll set comes another doll sleepover set with matching storybook and accessories that include a toothbrush, toothpaste, bunny slippers, and more. Everything is in good condition, and there are no missing pieces or broken parts. All four of the horse's legs can move and bend, and the doll's arms, legs, and head move as well. The doll has rich dark brown hair and dark blue eyes. This collection would make a great Christmas gift, especially with the holidays right around the corner, or even a birthday present for any little girl who loves ranch life. Right now, my asking price is $100. I will take offers on it, and you can reach me at 605-644-7337. Thank you.
Hello, I'm in the market for crafting supplies, mainly like yarn, fabric, embroidery thread, or similar materials. if you have some old supplies sitting around that you've been, like, meaning to give away or don't need anymore, I'd be glad to take it off your hands. Just text me at 520-548-1311 and let me know if you're interested and what you have if you have something. Thanks. Have a good one.
Hi. I have numerous Chilton and Haynes automotive repair manuals. I just glanced at some that were in sight here and counted 20 or 25, so I have more than a few. Some are domestic cars and light trucks such as Ford, Chevy, Dodge, and others. And some are foreign like Toyota, Honda, different foreign makes. I'm asking $5 for the very good ones, and as the condition depreciates, so does the price. I also make volume deals. If you are in need of a manual, it might be worth your while to check with me. Thank you. You can contact me at 605-645-3882. Bye.
Hi, I have a 14-inch adorable ballerina bunny in a cute pink tutu dress. This is an adorable bunny stuffed animal with a cute satin and tulle tutu, and it's pink on a white bunny. It freestands on its own and even has two little bows around its ears, which hang down really far along its back. This would be a great present for any little girl that loves ballet. It looks great sitting on a shelf or for a bed decoration. It is very well stuffed and keeps its shape. It's in good shape with no tears, worn spots, or stains. You can call me at 605-644-7337, and I am asking $20. Thank you.
Hi, I have an Apples to Apples Junior card game in pristine condition that I'm trying to sell. I've had it for a few years, but only had like a couple chances to play it, so it's in really good condition. The box doesn't have any scuffs or rips, and all the cards are there. I'm asking $15, and you can contact me by texting 520-548-1311. If you're interested or want to make an offer, just go ahead and text me at that number. Thank you. Bye.
Hi. A lady I've known since we were young kids asked me to put her car in an ad here for her, so I'll go ahead with it. It's a 1999 Jaguar Model X J8 four-door sedan, always garaged, almost mint condition, has a little over 100,000 miles on it, original forest green paint, interior is leather, buckskin tan color, has bucket seats in front, automatic on the floor, battery is brand new. She has a clear title in hand. She's asking $10,200 for it or best offer. You can contact her at 605-641-6955. It is a beautiful car. Thank you.
Thank you.
Growing Business Solutions is an LLC started in Tucson, Arizona in 2004. This is John Dale, everyone. I founded Growing Business Solutions as the master's thesis for the McGuire Center for Entrepreneurship Concentration in Entrepreneurship. Since then, I've worked professionally in enterprise software, delivering solutions to healthcare. I've delivered encryption software for the largest credit union in Canada. I put together a 52-gun raffle for law enforcement, a law enforcement association. I've delivered for higher ed, K-12, and other firms. I can design and build these applications from the ground up. They're scalable, fast, secure, privacy certified. I can also conduct audits, and I can perform consulting of many different technological varieties. Again, that's growingbusinesssolutions.com. Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is John Dale of Pretty Little Ditties. I play original music, and I do a lot of improv with my presentation. Every performance is different. I also love to teach and interact with people who appreciate and enjoy live music from a real person. I have deep knowledge and experience in music, and it comes through in the playing that I work hard to be able to bring to your event. If you'd like to have me out, please don't hesitate to drop me a note at info@plainstribune.com. Again, that's Pretty Little Ditties. That's what I'm calling my little music venture. So I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.